The following program was produced by United Nations Radio. In order to ensure worldwide distribution in time for United Nations Day, production was completed during the third week of September.
Each year, the Secretary General of the United Nations submits to the General Assembly a report on the work of the organization. This year, the introduction to the report begins with this four-line paragraph.
Debates and events during the year since the publication of the last report have brought to the fore different concepts of the United Nations: the character of the organization, its authority, and its structure.
This program recalls some of these debates and events of the past year, and the concepts of the UN which have emerged from them.
United Nations Radio presents The Year of the Whirlwind, a program for the UN's 16th anniversary. The narrator, Albert Decker.
In the affairs of men and of nations, a year has no precise beginning and no precise end. All is movement from what was to what could be. Yet for clarity, a measure is essential, a time span within which all that has been can be brought into focus. This past year of the whirlwind, therefore, begins 12 months ago, when this music was played by a Japanese orchestra in a Paris concert hall for an audience all over the world. It was part of the 1960 International Concert for the United Nations Day. This annual concert is always framed by the meetings of the General Assembly. The surging tides of the debates surround the occasion, making it a brief anchorage, a time and place for thoughts like this.
How sharp the conflicts, how tense the mistrust reflected in what is said and done in our world of today, as reflected in this hall and in this house. We are not permitted to forget that we have too much in common, too great a sharing of interests, and too much that we might lose together for ourselves and for succeeding.
Thoughts at the 1960 concert from Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld, thoughts prompted by the assembly that framed it, the 15th Assembly, distinguished as none before had been, not only by the presence of so many heads of state and government, but by the intensity of its debates.
This is a cry from the heart of Asia.
Agresión económica, como lo saben todos los delegados aquí.
Will any further debate of this subject now hurt
them? Чтобы каждое государство имело возможность высказать.
As long as a single foot of African soil remains under foreign domination,
the официальные речницы жон.
Organización política de la República Congolesa.
Trebalo bi znači radi vođenja pregovora o razoružanju pronaći rešenje.
Il s'agit pas ici de sympathie pour tel ou tel régime.
Its only desire is to live in peace and freedom and to let all other peoples live in peace and freedom.
A reflection of our world as 1960 entered its last weeks. At that time, the agony of the Congo was acute.
300,000 Baluba refugees, victims of tribal fighting, were living under conditions of acute starvation.
The voice of a member of the UN Congo mission in the South Kasai province in mid-December.
By the roadside, around primitive dispensaries, I saw the skeletal and bloated bodies of women and children, and they were mostly children.
A tragic human reflection of what months of turmoil can produce. And at UN headquarters, the political reflections.
Истинными виновниками этой трагедии народа Конго являются колониальные державы.
Those who are really guilty of the tragedy of the Congolese people are, of course, the colonial powers and their agents in the Congo, who were being active with the actual help of the Secretary General, his representatives, and the military command.
Criticism of the UN Congo operation, voiced by Ambassador Valerian Zorin of the Soviet Union and by others in the socialist group.
Notre critique est, nous le reconnaissons ouvertement sévère, Our criticism is, we frankly admit, severe and implacable. But the number of countries which are critical of the present state of affairs and which are expressing their disapproval of the activities of Mr. Hammarskjöld and the United Nations command is growing rapidly.
Ambassador Edward Mezencescu of Romania. On more than one occasion, views such as those drew responses from the Secretary General. This, for example.
Withdraw the United Nations force, and it is my fear everything would crumble. Short of a substitute being created for the force from outside, with all that this means.
And following that, on another occasion.
If and when that were to happen, the world would be facing a confused Spanish war situation, with fighting going on all over the prostrate body of the Congo, and pursued for nebulous and conflicting aims.
1960 ended, but not the crisis, and not the conflict it had sparked within the UN. In mid-February, in the Security Council, the representative of the United Kingdom, Sir Patrick Dean.
The distinguished representative of the Soviet Union rose to impassioned heights of oratory in his contribution today to the myth of new colonialist plots in the Congo.
And at that same council meeting, Ambassador Adlai Stevenson of the United States.
The Congo must not become a battleground, as I have said, either for a cold or a hot war among the big powers. In contrast to others, the United States has never at any time provided a single tank, a single gun, a single soldier, a single piece of equipment that could be used for military purposes to anyone in the Congo.
And a voice from Africa, Ambassador George Padmore of Liberia.
Should the Red Army and the United States Marines meet in the Congo, both Moscow and Washington would be safe, as they both probably want it, but there will be no Leopoldville or Stanleyville or Elizabethville. Certainly, there might also be no Brazzaville, or Lagos, or Accra, or Monrovia, or Conakry.
As the weeks and months went by and the meetings continued, so did the UN operations. In April, the man who had seen the skeletal and bloated bodies on a South Kasai roadside in December visited the area again.
I saw that the UN had begun a massive relief effort, backed by the specialized agencies and supported by people from all over the world. Six aircraft arrived on Christmas Day with 25 tons of food. But the hospital in Miabi still had no doctors, no nurses, and little food. 1,200 patients occupied 250 beds. I returned in April. Driving along the same roads, visiting the same hospital in Miabi, I looked in vain for the famine. During 3 days, I saw three cases of kwashiorkor, where before there had been thousands. Because during the preceding months, the UN relief operation had been distributing up to 60 or 70 tons of food a day.
Along with such emergency action, made possible by worldwide generosity, the long-term civilian operations continued, hampered sometimes by political instability, but considered increasingly important for the country's future. Operations such as this, to choose just one typical example among many.
Most of all, the United Nations has been organizing training programs to develop competent leaders in many fields. Just before I left, I attended the graduation exercises at a school for agricultural mechanics. 38 young Congolese received diplomas after a 3 month course. They were the first Congolese who knew how to drive, maintain, and repair tractors and farm machinery. And now they've returned to take up their work in the five provinces from which they came.
Gradually, as 1961 advanced, the tumult of the early months of the crisis began to subside. Passions began to cool. The dividing lines between the various factions within the country began to fade. The urge for reconciliation gained strength. By July, a major hurdle was cleared. On the 27th, President Joseph Kasavubu spoke to the assembled deputies at Luvanium University on the outskirts of Leopoldville.
Enfin, le Parlement a pu se réunir. Depuis plus de 10 mois, notre malheureux pays connaît des épreuves terribles.
At last, Parliament has been able to meet again. For more than 10 months, our unhappy country has been going through terrible experiences. Political passions have been unchained in many parts, and the children of this country have been torn apart. To put an end to this nightmare, we have had to reconvene Parliament, because only a parliamentary solution can solve the existing crisis.
On August 2nd, both houses of Parliament approved a new central government headed by Cyril Adula. The news was widely welcomed. Among the comments, this one by Nigeria's foreign minister, Jaja Wasuku, who was chairman of the UN Conciliation Commission in the Congo.
Perhaps some people could not have believed it. Some of us who had been there declared that we were optimistic. We had confidence in the ability of the Congolese people to find a solution if they would only be left alone by outsiders.
A major hurdle was cleared, but it was not the last. By September, the Congo was again in torment. UN forces, acting under Security Council directives, and at the request of the central government, moved into Katanga. Their mission? To ensure the expulsion of foreign military and paramilitary personnel serving with the provincial government. Among the results, attacks on the UN troops by Katanga forces led by mercenaries, bloodshed, and the death of Secretary General Hammarskjöld in the course of an effort to halt it. A deepening sense of crisis, of uncertainty, as on September 19th, the General Assembly met in New York for its 16th annual session. The Congo was not alone, however, as the center of the past year's whirlwind. Its force has been felt in other parts of Africa, in the Caribbean, the Middle East, and Europe, and the sound of it has been rarely stilled in UN meetings. Voices in the Security Council.
The conditions of forced labor, police repression, and diabolical political oppression cannot be endured any longer. And African nationalism in Angola has at last found expression in revolt.
Mr. Alex Kaysan Saki of Ghana.
This revolt is a living one, and so Portugal must perforce come to terms with it.
And for Portugal, Mr. Vasco Garin.
The Muslim founder, gratuitous and outrageous accusations have been made here against Portugal again today. We protest most vehemently against such accusations. They are fabricated accusations made for the purpose of pure political propaganda.
Voices, too, in a special assembly on the crisis in Tunisia, when the debate sometimes ranged beyond the immediate dispute to other issues in other places. One of the speakers, Mr. Garcia Inchaustegui of Cuba.
Y la agresión imperialista de Francia contra el pueblo y el gobierno de Túnez no recuerda la agresión imperialista del gobierno de
The imperialist aggression of France against the people and government of Tunisia reminds us of the imperialist aggression of the government of the United States of America against the people and the revolutionary government of Cuba. We understand with complete contempt the fact that North American bombs have fallen on Tunisia as they have on Angola and Algeria and as they have on Cuba.
A reply from the United States through Mr. Adlai Stevenson.
No bombs, I repeat, no bombs have been dropped by the United States on Angola, on Algeria, on Tunisia, or on Cuba. Some respect for the truth would improve the credibility, if not the emotional quality, of the gentleman's rhetoric.
Voices again in the Security Council, among them Sir Patrick Dean of the United Kingdom.
Kuwait, as you know, is a small country. The country is flat and open desert, and Iraqi military forces, which greatly outnumber the military forces of Kuwait, could invade Kuwait in a few hours after an order had been given to attack. There have also been indications during the past few days that reinforcements, particularly tanks, have been moved down southwards from Baghdad. This, of course, not only increased the already existing Iraqi potential to attack, but indicated its possible imminence.
For Iraq, in this dispute, Dr. Adnan Pachachi.
Can there be any doubt, sir, of the aggressive intentions of the United Kingdom after it has landed its troops in Kuwait and continues to strengthen them by reinforcements from Bahrain, Aden, and other places? The injection of troops of a great power with a long and disastrous colonial history in the area can only result in endangering international peace and security. That this should have been done in spite of the fact that Iraq has not moved one single soldier and has declared repeatedly that we intend to preserve and defend our legitimate rights in Kuwait by peaceful means demonstrates very clearly that the United Kingdom is not interested in protecting Kuwait, as it alleges, but has far more serious designs and intentions in respect of the security and independence of Iraq.
And for the tiny sheikhdom of Kuwait, Mr. Abdel Aziz Hussein.
Iraq knows quite well that the new agreement between Kuwait and the United Kingdom entitles the government of Kuwait to make a request for aid from the United Kingdom whenever the independence of Kuwait is endangered. Before June 25, 1961, General Qasim had never even suggested that Kuwait might be a part of Iraq. But no sooner was the independence of Kuwait made known than General Qasim put forth his illegitimate claim to sovereignty over Kuwait and threatened to annex it immediately.
All these issues and many more have created the whirlwind. In all, the UN has been involved or is involved in one way or another, and all have played their part in bringing to the fore different concepts of the United Nations, the character of the organization, its structure, and its authority. It was Chairman Khrushchev in the early stages of the 15th Assembly who launched what became popularly known as the Troika Principle, the replacement of the post of the Secretary General by three secretaries representing the socialist, Western, and unaligned groups of states. The idea has been restated many times. Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko, for example, recalled it during one of the Security Council debates on the Congo during March.
Мы настаиваем на этом потому, что хотим, чтобы все страны располагали в Организации Объединенных Наций равными возможностями.
We insist on this because we want all countries to have equal opportunities in the United Nations. We do so because we cannot tolerate the fact that it is only outwardly an international organization, whereas in fact it continues to serve the interests of only one group of states.
And from an assembly debate on the Congo, Poland's Deputy Foreign Minister, Mr. Joseph Winowicz.
The problem we face is such a reorganization of the United Nations Secretariat as to adapt it to the pattern and needs of the world today, so as to enable it to cope with the great tasks facing the United Nations, not only in relation to the Congo, but also with those it will have to face in the years to come. The year 1960 is not the year 1945.
Bulgaria's deputy foreign minister, too, Mr. Milko Tarabanov.
À l'étape actuelle du développement historique, un seul homme n'est pas en mesure d'interpréter les décisions et la politique des Nations Unies.
At the present stage of historical development, one man is not capable of interpreting the decisions and policies of the United Nations.
In the introduction to his annual report, the Secretary General summarizes these views and variations on them in these words.
Certain members conceive of the organization as a static conference machinery for resolving conflicts of interests and ideologies, to be served by a secretariat which is to be regarded not as fully internationalized, but as representing within its ranks those very interests and ideologies.
Then a summary of the opposing school of thought.
Other members conceive of the organization primarily as a dynamic instrument of governments through which they should seek reconciliation, but through which they should also try to develop forms of executive action undertaken on behalf of all members.
Expressions of opinion in line with this have been as numerous as those in support of the conference concept. Ireland's foreign minister, for example, Mr. Frank Aiken.
Let it not be said that our organization was destroyed because some member nations openly attacked its structure, because others gave it limited support while continuing to pursue their own policies, often at variance with the United Nations policies.
And the leader of the Japanese delegation to the UN, Mr. Koto Matsudaira.
I should like to point out that any attempt to weaken the functions of the Secretariat must be rejected. The office of the Secretary General must be of an international character, responsible solely to the United Nations as a whole. The proposal for the reorganization of the Secretariat on the basis of the representation of certain groups would paralyze the function of the United Nations and would be conducive to its eventual breakdown.
And a representative of Norway, Mr. Sivert Nielsen.
An attitude of recrimination certainly does not create an atmosphere of goodwill and cooperation among member states, which is necessary in order to make constructive use of the potentialities of the United Nations in the settlement of international disputes.
And the vice chairman of the Canadian delegation, Mr. Wallace Nesbitt, on what he called the challenge to the future of the UN.
This challenge is for all members of the United Nations, large and small, to meet. But the middle and smaller powers have most at stake because they have most to lose if the United Nations fails. As has been truly said before in this assembly, it is the middle and smaller powers, and especially those who have recently reached independence, which are the principal beneficiaries of a strong and sound United Nations.
Thus the two concepts have been propounded and developed over the past months and in differing contexts. To recall just one more example, when last April the assembly was debating the financial estimates for the Congo operation, the representative of the Soviet Union, Mr. A.A. Rushin, in support of the view that the Secretariat should be reorganized, said this.
Сверху донизу. Я рассказал, как и в штаб-квартире ООН все эти операции находятся...
At headquarters, the operation is entirely in the hands of the NATO countries. There is at headquarters a Department of Political and Security Council Affairs. Ordinary common sense would seem to indicate that all these questions should be decided upon in that department. Nevertheless, they have been removed from the competence of that department and assigned to the executive offices of the Secretary General. Why? Because the head of the Department of Political and Security Council Affairs at headquarters is a Soviet citizen. Consequently, it cannot deal with the Congo. Financial and civilian operations are in the hands of citizens of NATO countries. Everything is being done one-sidedly.
On this and similar points, the introduction to the Secretary General's annual report contains these words.
While it may be said that no man is neutral in the sense that he is without opinions or ideals, it is just as true that, in spite of this, a neutral secretariat is possible. Anyone of integrity, not subjected to undue pressures, can, regardless of his own views, readily act in an exclusively international spirit and can be guided in his actions on behalf of the organization solely by its interests and principles and by the instructions of its organs.
And closely related to that, This intervention by the Secretary General in the course, once again, of a debate on the Congo.
We, all of us, who give what we have to give to the work of this organization, do so because of our faith in what it stands for and in the vital necessity of this experiment in organized international cooperation for mutual aims. We do so with pride in the integrity of the efforts made. When we come under responsible criticism, we accept it as a valuable contribution to the common effort aimed at improving its quality. However, when criticism takes such a direction as to negate the very ideals for which this organization stands and for which we consider it a privilege to work, one may be led to ask whether the spirit of this organization will justify for long the faith on which the efforts are and must be based.
The debate, the exchange, the dialogue on these basic principles and the expression of them in the structure and work of the UN continues.
On what are they based?
On one thing, fear.
Nous ne pouvons pas accepter que le sort de nos frères.
After a year and more, the whirlwind has lost little, if any, of its force, either in the UN as an organization or in the world at large, groping, often in fear, towards an unknown future.
As long as a single foot of African soil remains under foreign domination.
In the words of the introduction,
the effort through the organization to find a way by which the world community might, step by step, grow into organized international cooperation within the Charter must either progress or recede. Those whose reactions to the work of the organization hamper its development or reduce its possibilities of effective action may have to shoulder the responsibility for a return to a state of affairs which governments had already found too dangerous after the First World War.
The representatives of the nations now meeting in New York at the 16th session of the General Assembly are faced with this vast and many-sided question. Only they can plot the course ahead. Only they can determine the direction in which they, exercising their equal and sovereign rights, wish to see the United Nations develop.
The Year of the Whirlwind was produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio to mark the 16th anniversary of the founding of the World Organization. The music from the UN Day Concert in 1960 was played by the Symphony Orchestra of the Japan Broadcasting Corporation, NHK, Tokyo. The program was narrated by Albert Decker. This is United Nations Radio.